Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome to What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name's Jay Moran, and our guest, Lee Anthony Freeman. Mr. Freeman, founder of a charter school and also hoping to open a charter school here in the city of Buffalo in the coming years as well. And we'll be coming back home to Buffalo for the Sankofa Conference on February 28th, running from 10 until 4, Performing Arts School here in the city of Buffalo. Lee Anthony Freeman, thanks for joining us.
Good brother. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, like I said, you're coming home to Buffalo. You're born here. Your early years were in Buffalo. You're now in Georgia out of Atlanta. So you came here on one of our particularly cold days. So I thank you for making the trip.
Again, appreciate you for having me. Yes, I am originally from Buffalo, New York. Been in Atlanta the last 10 years. But today is a little colder than expected. I think my blood cells done warmed up, and so I got off the plane and threw my hoodie on, but it's always good to be home. It's always good to be home with the loved ones.
It is great to have you here, for sure. I want to talk about what you're doing right now, and then we're going to kind of circle back to your background, because the two are very much interconnected. Mm. But you are putting together, or you have a charter school that you're going to open in Macon, Georgia, which is not too far outside mm-hmm. of Atlanta, if I remember my geography. What makes you want to open a charter school?
Yes. So Macon, Georgia is roughly 2 hours or so, hour and a half from Atlanta South. And what makes me want to open a charter school? It is our third iteration, right? So originally I started roughly 10 years ago with a nonprofit, right? And then we evolved into a for-profit educational firm. And then, as I stated, our third iteration, as we continue to grow and expand and be able to clarify what the mission is and how we can best impact that and succeed at that mission, is the charter school. And what makes me want to do that, understanding that the program is essential, right? Like, the work in which we've done over the years was great. However, we want to truly be an influence and intertwined in a child's development holistically, right? The hours or two in which the staff may go in there to facilitate programming isn't necessarily enough, right? If you're seeing a kid 2 to 3 times a week is not enough. Roughly 6 hours at the fullness isn't enough. And so I got off a call before I walked in, and one of the community leaders was suggesting a boarding charter school.
Oh,
I'm like, well, brother, I don't know if we have the money just yet. You know, we can see what that looks like as we continue to phase out in year 6, 7, right? But the point is him understanding that, again, the need holistically, which a child needs today, unfortunately, you can't do it in such a small time frame, right? 8 hours is not even becoming enough at this time. And so the charter school is imperative in what we're really trying to accomplish, which is to mold a child, specifically young boys, into men in the best way in which they can be.
Is there a certain target, for lack of a better term, certain mm-hmm. type of kid mm-hmm. that you think is best served by going mm-hmm. to, you know, going into the charter school to tackle your curriculum?
Yeah. So that's ironic that you had that question. So I was speaking with my team yesterday, and as we think about the individuals that we want to bring into the fold as sponsors or partners, and many years ago at our inception phase, it was young Black boys.
Okay.
Right. However, as we continue to grow, as I said, as the we become more intentional about what we're trying to target, the goals is boys to men. Why is that? Because when we look at the world, not just America, but when we look at the world holistically, the idea of a man has been discredited, right? The stigma of what it is to be a man had been discredited. And so our goal is to change that narrative, right? Because I don't like going into spaces outside of the intersectionality of being black and a man. But if we just take away the blackness and still as a man, it is still a poor stigma and a shame that comes around with being a man, unfortunately, in today's society. And so many years ago when we started, it was the target audience and demographics were young black boys.
Okay.
But now as we grew to expand our lenses and understand that long-term strategy, we're solely focusing on boys. It doesn't matter your ethnicity, your nationality, right? Your sex, or it doesn't matter your sex, right?
Or
your religion, beliefs, sure. And your creed.
Yeah. So you said stigma about men. Maybe expand on what you're getting at there. Is it the idea that men are falling short of their purpose, their goals, the responsibilities, or is it more of a perception of men?
That's great. I do think it's a perception because data suggests otherwise,
okay.
Right? But the perception of men is just as important, if not more important, right? And so how do we change that? Well, we got to start at the core and grant light and expose what's transpiring in society today when it comes to young boys to men. And so we're enthused about that accomplishment and that pathway.
Okay. So charter schools, obviously you believe in charter schools. You wouldn't be going through all this effort.
To do it.
What do you feel that allows you to be different in a charter school that will be especially helpful for these young men?
Yeah. So our charter school, our theme is skill traits, right? 6th to 12th grade. And specifically Macon, Georgia, data shows that the poverty rate is 27%. Here in Buffalo, our poverty rate, unfortunately, is 23%, right? I believe it statistics show in 2020, we was the third poor city in the nation,
right.
Buffalo specifically, right? But then we look at Macon, it's a lot of similarities, which is why I chose Macon, why we chose Macon holistically. So not just the datas, right, and the numbers, coupled with that there's two prominent institutions in Macon. You have Mercer and you have Fort Valley. However, there isn't a hub that properly prepares and pipelines students, right, to be equipped to go into those higher education realms. And then when it comes to myself, as a leader in this space, I believe my experience have showed me that I'm just a personification of what it is to be overlooked, right?
Sure.
And yet needed to just be invested in. Right. Just need a little bit TLC. And that's what Buffalo is as well as Macon. And so outside of the skilled trades, there is a financial literacy component that is just as essential and coupled with. So each grade, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, have the capacity to receive up to $250 per year. And that's dictated on their grade level. Right.
Okay.
And so if you receive an A, of course, you get the full 250. 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, you have the capacity to receive up to $500. However, you don't touch the funds at all, right? And what happens is at the average of 50 students per grade, that 12th grade cohort, if we're looking at 50 students, right, you have roughly around $100,000 or so that can be invested either into an investment portfolio,
all right.
Right, or investment property. So it's phenomenal, which we're extremely excited about. The catch is slightly a catch, but a nuanced feature is that students also cannot touch the funds until every 10 years of their anniversary.
Okay.
Right. And so we're really trying to harness the idea of, again, when we talk about changing that narrative, but generational wealth, right? Holistically. So if the first 10 years at the 8% interest rate, that $2,000 to $3,000 may average anywhere between like 6 to 10, whether if it's an investment portfolio or again, investment property. As we continue to build upon that, right, that compound rate, if a student does not take out their money at any point, that 30 years, that $100,000, right, can become $1 million,
sure.
Right? Which we know realistically at the age of 27, 28 years old, that $6,000 may be appealing and I may need that for real life circumstances, right?
Right.
At 30 something, my life again has changed and I may need that now $12,000 to $15,000. But we really just want to set our kids up to succeed, right? And again, when we talk about changing the narrative, we really want to do our best to equip them, not just starting off with a certified skilled trade, starting off with at $60,000 or more, not just having an opportunity to go into higher education, but then also at the age of 17, 18 years old, you are now graduating, right, a part owner into indoor property or stocks and bonds, right? And even though you don't touch the funds into roughly 10 years, the idea is that cohort, their capstone project, they have to research that entire where they want
to. So they get an understanding of how it works.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I know when I was 18, 28, 38, maybe even 40, I didn't understand how it worked. I was a little late to the game. But that being stated, though, it'd be, and back to the other part of what you said, generational wealth. I mean, it's a, you know, we've had more than one conversation on this show about that and, you know, trying to, you know, get people to focus on that. And, you know, but it's, you know, it's a long, long road, as you understand. Lee Anthony Freeman is our guest here on What's Next. Lee Anthony is going to be one of the panelists coming up at the Sankofa Conference on February 28th at Performing Arts. We've had a couple of other members of the panel with us on previous programs as well. Lee Anthony, founder of a charter school in the Macon, Georgia, that's going to be opening, what, 2 years? 2028?
Yeah. Yes, sir, fall 2028.
And then the concept is then to also open one here in Buffalo in 2032.
Roughly, yes, sir. Yeah. That is the goal.
Yeah. The challenges for a charter. What are the challenges? I mean, I'm sure you've lived them and lived them every day.
Yes,
What are the challenges of putting this together?
The primary challenge is realistically when it comes to the school board, right? When it comes to public education versus charter, public education believe that you're taking funds out of their budget, right? And so how do you make it make sense to the school board that you are trying to be an extension and an advocate for what their mission is, right? And so it's not necessarily community, because community more times than not understand the need of the model and what you're trying to produce in their neighborhood. And for us, we understand that co-design is important, right? So the school isn't being ownership led, right? It's not led by myself or the team. It's led by the community, right? So starting in March, we'll have our monthly open houses where community can come in. We roll out the deck and showing them constantly, hey, this is what the intricacies are within the school. This is what the school is. And then you also have opportunity to do your input. And what do you feel as though is needed?
Okay.
So outside. So again, it's not the community. It's government. Right. It is those as which seemingly may be in power. Right. As those that seemingly may have influence. It has been the largest hurdles today, because realistically, contingent on what neighborhood you're in, on what environment that you're in, what community you're in, unfortunately, we have those community stakeholders that if I'm not leading the project, right, I'm not comfortable with it. You have those in which is in power. If it didn't come from my desk, if it didn't come from my mouth, right, I'm not comfortable with it.
Right.
And how do I get acknowledged and recognition for this? And sometimes they can't.
So let's maybe, if you don't mind going through it, I don't have to get too specific or mention names or anything like that. But so you had to go to the Macon School Board and make your pitch. You had to get approval, right? I mean,
so petition goes up January 2027.
Okay.
And so, yes, at that point, then it's the capacity interview, as you just stated. And so not yet. However, there has been spaces in which we have interacted, right? And then just it's really unfortunately the history of charter schools in Macon specifically that's been distasteful. And so there's been a lot of charter schools that started that have failed, right? And so the school board isn't in favor, right? It's like, hey, we done moved all this money. Parents done moved their kids and just for it to fail. So the history of the thing is, I think, is really causing the biggest issue within Macon, which then is a reflection in, like I stated, the community leaders. The community leaders, not necessarily the parents themselves,
right,
but you have those CBOs, right? You have those stakeholders that's like, hey, I want to get behind this, but I'm a little hesitant because history shows,
right?
It has not been successful and it has not been a wise investment to get behind.
So you must know then or have an understanding of how or why some of these other schools failed. And you're going, you know, I'm sure you've already heard from some of these leaders about their contention, their concerns.
Yeah.
So how have you, can you take me through like an issue that you've had to overcome or you've tried to, you know, say, hey, this is why we're different.
Yeah, so why we're different is because more times than not, what occurs is that those that decide to found a charter school, their entire career has been in education. But the reality of the matter is, as a charter school or as any entity, you become a business owner, right? And you may lack the skill set and the knowledge and awareness and the credibility to understand how to operate a business structure, right? And so some of the schools that have failed in charter schools nationwide, that is one piece, right? You have no experience as a leader, as a business owner, all education, right? Or on the opposing end, the charter schools that failed in Macon specifically, you have entrepreneurs that was frustrated within the public school district and yet really had no experience in education.
Okay.
And so what I like to share all the time is that I'm not an educator that does business, but I'm a businessman and my product is education, right? I've had 10 years worth of experience and wisdom and knowledge of that I've attained through business. However, the business within itself has been education and premise.
Lee Anthony, you've made a nice opening here to get a little bit into your personal background. You're telling me very graciously about your young days here in Buffalo.
Young days.
Yeah, I should mention that Lee Anthony is has a bachelor's from Morehouse,
yes,
in Atlanta, has a master's from Boston College.
Yes, sir.
And I was working on his doctorate at Clark.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty impressive. One of those three would be more than enough for most of us. Mm. But you didn't make it out of school here in Buffalo, did you?
I did not make it out of school here in Buffalo. I ended up dropping out in the 11th grade. Each year of my high school career, I was making some poor decisions. There was a very pivotal moment at the age of 14. Hindsight, looking back on it, I understand that I was suffering from abandonment issues, right? I was raised by a single mother on the east side of Buffalo. My father got me every other weekend or so, but he would then take me to one of his friends' houses, which was a norm for me. I didn't really understand. I didn't have an issue with it until he remarried and moved to Rochester at the age of 14. And I think that's when the abandonment issue started. And of course, not understanding what was going on as a 14-year-old kid and not knowing how to articulate myself and communicate my emotions, I began to act out, right? And so she kicked me out my freshman year, had to go move to Rochester with my father and his family and begged her to let me come back. She let me come back and you know, unfortunately, changes didn't occur at that time. She kicked me out again, and I had, by that time, his job was GM and relocated to him to Delaware.
Okay.
And so I moved to Delaware. And again, when I think that was the first time she said on to me, "You take you everywhere you go." Hindsight, I know what that means. At that time, I didn't. And so criminal activity began to heighten in Delaware. They placed me in a mental institution at the age of 17. And then they kicked me out and I moved back here. And by that time, I forfeited, right? I was like, you know what? School, I was embarrassed to graduate, embarrassed of the idea of graduating at the age of 19, right? And I graduated my class. And so I went ahead and dropped out. And I want to say that was, I don't know, October or so. And then January, I took my GED and passed it. And so my mom liked to confess, like, you know, it wasn't that you were smart. You just wanted to do other things, right? You could have did it. Why didn't you? And I was like, I want to do other things, right?
So, I want to do it at 18 year old.
Yes. So unfortunately, again, I didn't complete school here at that time. So I dropped out of 11th grade, but, you know.
So we talked a little bit also before we went on the air about mentorship. So
yes, sir.
Do you feel like your experience, though, has helped you become a mentor, to be a better mentor?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so early on, like I stated, the inception of our nonprofit, we started off as a mentorship organization. However, as we grew and scaled, we end up changing that term because the philosophy within the organization, we believe that mentorship is a little bit aloof, right? And what I mean when I say that is that mentorship doesn't have structure. It's the idea of a person that's a resource in your life, right? That you can always go to. But then as we grew, we became a curriculum-based program, right? And so we understood the data that suggested these things is how we get you from point A all the way to Z. And so as myself as a mentor, I can't necessarily say I'm a mentor today more than I am a coach.
Okay.
Right. I'm maybe a mentor to others for those that's from afar, right, that may watch me, or you can call me when you need. But for me to be continuously in your life on a day-to-day basis or a weekly basis, I would suggest that I'm a coach, because we're going to try to get you from this standpoint in your life to the next standpoint where you desire to be at a more rapid pace.
Kids.
Kids.
So you want to help kids.
I don't know about that.
No, but I'm wondering from this standpoint. I'm old enough to hear it all the time. The kids are this. They're not like they were 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever. What do you see? What do you see about kids? Are kids still just kids?
That's interesting. Yeah. Kids are just kids, I think. Kids are my heartbeat, right? Mm. Kids bring a level of joy to me that I don't experience anywhere else. People holistically, like I am a lover of humanity today, but I think that you become that by so many struggles and failures, right, and disappointments, that you have a different level of compassion for those, for humanity, right? But the youth specifically is like, because you really don't know, and I know what you want, but you don't know how to articulate it, right? And sometimes as adults, we forget what it is to have been that age, and we don't know how to offer what they need, right? In real time, I just bought me a dog a week ago, right? And I'm relearning this. I'm relearning that, you can't control everything, and unfortunately, you have to meet people where they're at. I got to meet my dog where it's at. She's 8 weeks old, and like, why do you keep using the bathroom in my house? I take you out in the morning, I bring you back in, and 20 minutes within, we were just outside for 30 minutes. What possessed you to think that you need to use the bathroom in my living room, right? But understanding that I need to meet her where she's at, and I think most adults, we forget that because we have grown so, right? And we have become. And so we have a hard time reflecting on what it was to be 10, 11, 12, 13, 16 years of age. And especially when you have a young man that's looking you eye to eye, right? Or that's looking down upon you because he's larger than you. And you're like, oh, that's a man. No, he's immature, right? Mm-hmm. And realistically, right, he won't be mature enough until he's the age of 26 or so. So the frontal cortex suggests that it doesn't grow and at a full capacity into that roughly that age. And so I think that kids does me well, but as adults, we just forget what it's like.
Just before we wrap up here, I want to make sure that we get a couple of pieces of information on here. The name of the charter is United. Charter? Is that
the name of the educational firm is United Academy. Yeah. The name of our charter school is Ubuntu Leadership Institute.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's going to be in Macon, Georgia. Somebody wanted to find out more. Is there a place they can go online to check things out? Or do we have?
Yeah. You could check out our websites for the educational firm, United with the Y, academy.org. As far as Ubuntu, you can go to Ubuntu Leadership Charter School.org. Same thing for our Facebooks. Same things for our Instagrams. And that's where you can find us out at.
And of course, Lee Anthony Freeman is going to be one of the panelists coming up at the Sankofa conference on the 28th. We have a final question for you, Lee Anthony. The theme of the conference, Sankofa conference, is Know Thyself, a Call to the Diaspora.
Absolutely.
What does that mean to you?
Yeah. And so Sankofa within itself, the term means to go forward is to reach back, right? In order for me to know where I'm going, I must know my past, right? And as we just connected it through the interview, that my past had a large influence of who I've become and where I plan to go. And so the call to the diaspora is to understand the fullness of the intersectionalities of your being, but also your history, not just the African history, but your history holistically as an individual, right? And as, history repeats itself. And so really, with the conference, what the idea is that the message we hope to get across is that you take a deep dive of reflection, right, of your own experiences to get clarity on what you've been called to do and what you are as a being. That way you can be as influential as possible. And I think the last part I would like to touch on is that in African philosophy, in African traditions, there's the idea when it comes to parents, it differs from the East, right? And what happens over here in the West, what it is, we believe that the parent chooses the child, right? In the East, we believe that the child chooses the parents, right? And meaning that in all holy texts, it always talks about, I knew you before the womb, right? Meaning that you was an entity before the womb, right? And what you were in terms of your gift house, whether you was a nurturer, a healer, right? Of those things of that sort. If I was a healer, I was going to have to choose parents to help produce that. Now, the catch there, though, is that I have to choose broken parents, right? And in order to be broken, for me to learn how to re-heal myself before I then can heal a nation, right? And the same thing, again, if I was a nurturer, right? Meaning that there has to be a deficiency or a lack somewhere first, right? In order for me to then go ahead and to give that onto the world. And so when we think about the diaspora, is to understand like what you've been called to do. That way you can do it at the highest point in which you've been called to do it.
Lee Anthony, I really appreciate you sharing your story. Mm-hmm. Best of luck with the charter school in Macon and all the other endeavors. And good luck also on the at the Sankofa Conference as well.
Appreciate you, brother. The pleasure is mine. It's nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
It has been great having Lee Anthony Freeman with us here. He's going to be one of the panelists at the Sankofa Conference coming up on the 28th of February, 10 until 4 at Performing Arts. Thanks again to Lee Anthony Freeman for joining us on this portion of What's Next. Coming up, we have a conversation with Chantel Patton. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Trust doesn't happen by accident. It's built through careful reporting, verified facts, and respect for the audience. BTPM NPR's local journalists take the time to get it right, covering the issues shaping Western New York and Southern Ontario.
Immigration consultants like Tatiana Cabrera say they're seeing more interest in people coming to Canada, but warn there are still many hurdles to overcome.
It's not sort of a free-for-all type of an application, but I think it's still worth attempting for many people who see that they have either parent, grandparent, great-grandparent who may have been born in Canada.
UPD responded to a reported serious concern based on credible information and followed established police procedures. According to court filings from police, the students only had a photo to identify the person who made the threats.
News without spin, context without noise. This is Public Media.
Calling all storytellers in kindergarten through third grade. The Buffalo Toronto Public Media PBS Kids Writers Contest is back. Here are the details for parents, caregivers, and educators. Kid writers from Western New York and Southern Ontario can send us their stories until March 31st for a chance to win prizes and be featured in a celebration live streamed from our studios. Don't wait. Visit btpm.org/writerscontest to submit your entry today.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of Stage Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran. And today we're going to continue our conversations about the Sankofa Conference coming up on February 28th, 10 until 4 at Performing Arts here in the city of Buffalo. Today, we get to talk to the host, Chantel Patton. Hi, Chantel.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It is great to talk to you again. Of course, we talked to you previously about that Brown Bag Minority Business Directory.
Absolutely.
An effort that you founded.
Still happening? Absolutely. That will happen until there's no longer a need for amplification of minority-owned business. So as long as there is a space and place where we need more visibility, then the brown bag will continue to exist.
I like the way you said that. You know, I don't want to get too off the beaten path here, but when we get a chance to talk about this, like you said, the amplification of minority businesses, How is that going? Where do you put it right now, maybe compared to when you started?
It's been a wonderful uphill journey, and not in the tedious sense of the word.
Okay.
When I say that, I mean uphill trends. Seeing more and more of my friends, family members, people close to me, adjacent, becoming entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs. And all of that has actually led me into, I was able to take a new position as the director of programming and community engagement for a new nonprofit. And now I am able to produce more entrepreneurs because I'm running their entrepreneurship programming.
Okay.
So I get to run a business accelerator.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. We just graduated our first cohort, 12 businesses. We invested $10,000 across three businesses, three of the winners. So $5,000, $3,000, and $2,000 were invested as capital, just angel seed funding into the businesses. And then, of course, they leave with mentorship, access to networks, resources, tools, and the alumni network from those that have graduated. I graduated from this program.
Okay.
So it's full circle.
What did you take from the program?
I wasn't charging enough.
Okay.
and I also took, I still have deep relationships with everybody I was in the cohort with. And for those who are entrepreneurs, and then this might be putting a spotlight on for those who aren't entrepreneurs and haven't had the pleasure of knowing, entrepreneurship is lonely.
Mm.
You have family who doesn't understand why you're doing what you're doing. Why don't you just get a job? Unless you're lucky enough to have a partner that is also an entrepreneur or understands, then when you're, you know, when your significant other is ready to go to bed and it's midnight and you're like, no, I still have this idea I need to pump out.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, it gave me a community. And that's one of the biggest things that I was able to take out of this program, was walking out and having a network of individuals that I could pick up the phone and call who get it.
Mm, mm. I love that when you say that idea that you have to get out. I find that just personally interesting because I know that experience, right? Driving in early in the morning,
mm-hmm.
time to go to work. Boy, I've got a great idea. Oh, I've got job responsibilities to do. And then we can keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. It's got to be a big jump, I would think, to make that jump from all those responsibilities to finding the time, to making the time, to making the commitment to pursuing those ideas.
And then it gives you a whole new set of responsibilities. You are now accountable to yourself, yourself and whomever your target customer is, whoever you're serving. You then become their employee. People think that entrepreneurship gives you, you know, you break free from the chains of being an employee. No, you become an employee of your customer then.
Right, right.
And I think that I need more entrepreneurs to view it as such, that yes, you have this added layer of freedom, but you're not really free. You still have to hold yourself accountable to the standards set by your consumers, whomever it is you're servicing, whomever it is that you're looking to help. And so that's why I align myself with a lot of the things that I align myself with, because the individuals that I choose to work with, and that's a blessing to say I choose to work with, they're like-minded. They have the similar fortitude for what it is that they're doing. And you can see that they walk in their purpose and with passion. This is why I do a lot of the things that I do with Emmanuel.
I was just going to segue, so I appreciate you leading me in with that, just that you align with Emmanuel Kulu, of course, is the organizer of the Sankofa Conference. So you have been tabbed as the host of this, and I know things are falling into place. We just had a conversation with the featured guest speaker, as a matter of fact, via Zoom from England just the other day. And so there's a lot. There's some really ambitious goals involved here. Let's get into those. What do you see as the key element involved in this conference?
Self-reflection. Seeing yourself in the diaspora. Seeing yourself in your counterparts that are sitting in the room with you. Seeing our similarities as well as our differences. Honoring and respecting them. And then honoring that we all come from a singular source. That's something that Emmanuel teaches and preaches upon, you know, in his work on a day-to-day basis, that there is only one race, and that is the African race. And seeing that we're all derived from it, I think that the goal of this is to dismantle some barriers and to, again, initiate and complete some conversations that are very important in us being able to coexist with one another through all of our differences.
You told me before we went on the air that you see the conference not so much as a series of lectures, but a different kind of immersive experience. Take us through how you see it playing out.
I see this being a series of conversations, real, in-depth, raw and honest conversations about who we are. And I'm looking at this, you know, the moderator list. These individuals come from all different walks of life, different areas of entrepreneurship. They have been self-educated, formally educated, and just knowing that there is going to be this huge level of respect for the differences, but also a shining on the similarities. We are all pieces of the universe having human experiences. And we're all having the same experience. It's just our perception of it. And I think being able to share different perspectives and perceptions of what this human experience is for us, be eye-opening for everyone in the room.
Take us through the idea that, you said, honest conversations. It always sounds great, right? Well, we're going to have honest conversations. And then you get in the room, and emotions start to take over and different elements about that. How do you, and you're the host, so you're probably going to be charged with, you know, trying to make sure that this all falls into place. How do you, I don't want to say break that down necessarily, but try to help facilitate that?
It is having a respect for all the thoughts, opinions, feelings, validating that no one has bad feelings or wrong feelings in the room, but that we all have to come to a space and place. Either we're going to agree on it or we're going to agree to disagree. But knowing that the individuals who will be in this space, the energy, the frequencies and the vibrations of all of those who are involved in this conference, I don't think that I'm going to have any difficulties in having individuals maintain a certain level of respect, care, and concern, and showing grace for one another. I believe the atmosphere itself will lend to making sure that this is a space where we honor one another.
Who do you want to come to the conference?
Everyone.
Okay.
Now, we say everyone,
sure,
but I think it's going to be, if we have to go target or specifics,
yeah,
individuals who have a strong desire to know more about self, their origins, their roots. The quote, and I believe, and please, I might be wrong, I believe it's Martin Luther King, but said, you can't know where you're going until you know where you come from or where you've been. So people who want to know where they've been, where they come from, so that we don't continue to repeat the same mistakes, the same history over and over again that's kept us in this intellectual bondage that Kulu is trying to pull us out of. Not knowing who we are, where we come from, that we all come from one singular source, not subscribing to the things that divide us by way of just skin color. We have more things that bind us than divide us. And so we want people to come in who have open minds, open hearts, and they're ready to receive and share with grace.
And you mentioned to me also before we went on the air that, you know, you don't want anything, you don't want barriers for those who want to attend. Expand on that a little bit.
Oftentimes we find that there are barriers to access, whether it's to knowledge, whether it's to spaces and places. And so the one thing that even in the development of this conference, Kulu and I talked about many phone conversations, was making sure that no one had the excuse as to why they couldn't come. And so making sure that this is something that is free and open to the public to attend, that it's in a space that's accessible for individuals to attend, and making sure that it is a welcoming atmosphere. Because oftentimes the excuse is, well, the ticket was $50.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that, you
sure
know. Even me sitting in a space where on paper, I look like I'm wealthy. I wish it would translate into real life, but
so I shouldn't hit you up for a loan after this. No, okay.
Yes and no, okay, but alone, not for
alone,
me.
Alone's one thing.
But, you know, just making sure that, you know, there's a limited number of excuses as to why people couldn't participate. And making this a free program for people to come in, receive knowledge, be poured into, be loved on, be fed mind, body, spirit. That is something that we always want to make sure that we keep in place.
Our guest is Chantel Patton, back with us on What's Next. And Chantel is the host of the upcoming Sankofa Conference. It's taking place February 28th, 10 until 4 at Performing Arts. You said there's an Eventbrite page for that, so you can just do a quick search and find that and sign up. Because registration, like you said, there's no barriers, but you want to know who's coming.
Absolutely. So at the end of the day, of course, data, so that we can continue to put things, events and like this on, so that we know what people want, rather being presumptive and going, oh, well, you know, the community wants to hear about this and this. Why not ask? And what better way to do that than through having constant communication with our audience? And the only way to do that is through things like registration. So it's absolutely encouraged. We're not going to turn you away because you didn't register, but we would appreciate it if you did.
Now, you're involved in a lot of different things. We've talked, of course, about finding the or being the founder of that Brown Bag Minority Business District directory. Intersect Buffalo. You told me about this before we were on the air, and it is intriguing. Intersect Buffalo. Tell me all about this, please. So,
Intersect Buffalo is a brand spanking new organization. We started in May of 2025. We were granted this opportunity by Matt Enstis from Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, who said, go do all the good things and I'll help you make sure that they get done. And so we moved into the Old American Axle plant on East Delavan. So we're over there with Green Forest, Verity Parente, Back to Basics. Jeff Conrad has opened us and welcomed us in. And what we're doing over there is we're developing something called an empowerment district in the Delavan-Grider area. And what we're doing is we're building on four pillars. We're building on entrepreneurship, health equity, education, and engagement. In an area that is largely underserved, it has a huge Black and Brown population and a growing refugee population in that area, there's a gap in many different spaces and places. Erie County Medical Center being the only medical facility in the entire district. And we go from the 33 all the way to Bailey Avenue, to Genesee, to Kensington Avenue is what we span as far as the Delavan-Grider district. There's no mental health facilities or services in that area. There's no grocery store. That is literally a food desert. And so what we're trying to do is empower the people in the district to do more, be more, see more, and become more. My role is the Director of Programming and Community Engagement. I run the Business Accelerator, I See Success. It's a 12-week Business Accelerator program. We take entrepreneurs from startup and we prepare them to pitch for funding. And then we actually let them pitch and we have three winners. We give away, our last round was $10,000 across the three entrepreneurs who won. I'm looking to give away more. So anybody who would like to sponsor, please reach out to me so that we can invest into the small business community here in Buffalo. You know, that's my jam. That's what I do. It's myself, Kyrie Stevens, Adriana Vivarette. Kyrie has taken up the charge to say the east side of Buffalo can be so much more. And I'm going to do whatever I can to ensure that it becomes more. And that's how I ended up working with this team. We are small but mighty, and we are putting a lot of things together to make the east side of Buffalo a better place.
The Delavan-Grider neighborhood, you're focused on its growth. You're focused on its expansion. Let's talk about, as it stands right now, its strengths. What's there? You're looking for entrepreneurs. Then intrigue them about what's possible.
Well, absolutely. Again, I graduated from this program. So full circle, I was one of the first graduating cohorts and looking at a program that meets you where you're at, speaks to you in your language. From day one, our entrepreneurs, when I'm pouring into them, they come into the program and they're assigned with financial coaching so that we can get numbers right. Let's get our pockets right. Let's stop living paycheck to paycheck. Let's learn how to invest and create generational wealth. So that's one of my top tier things that I focus on. We give access to free legal clinics so that when you're structuring your business, we know that we're putting you in a position to win from day one. Long haul, longevity. So finding ways and finding ways to give sustainability and longevity to these businesses. And then just again, that network.
Right.
And so in a space where more often than not, the residents are told, get a job, go to work, come home, and this job barely lets your ends wave at each other, let alone meet.
Mm.
We're giving another alternative to the individuals in this area where that says you could go clock in for someone else and work on their dreams, or let me help you figure out how to work on yours.
We're talking with Chantel Patton this morning here on What's Next. Chantel involved in a lot of different things, but here talking about her role also with the upcoming Sankofa conference on February 28th, but also, you know, Chantel, you've lived this entrepreneur's life.
And
we kind of touched upon it before, because when you talked about being up at midnight, not being able to go to bed because you're working on an idea. So you're obviously talking about it from personal experience. Can you reflect for yourself, your personal growth and what it has meant to you to be an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. So I did not start out as an entrepreneur.
Were you always this outgoing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this was a gift that you had. Okay.
Yes. But it started out as a passion project. Not realizing that saying, oh, my people need a resource that tells them, you know, where we can shop with one another. Not realizing that that was, in fact, a vision. It just felt like the thing that I was supposed to do. And the journey has been in saying, oh, my God, you can make money at this. And it's not culture vulture. It's not appropriating. It is investing in myself so that I can continue to invest in those that I've chosen to serve. And so I've gone through business accelerators. Every time I turn, I'm actually getting ready to go through another one. Right now, I'm going through the Goldman Sachs business accelerator. Wow. I just got accepted into that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But going into all of these programs so that I knew what was going to be worth other entrepreneurs' time. And I said, I'll be the guinea pig. And that's been my journey is I'll try it first and then I'll turn around and go and say, you do it too. You do it too. You do it too. I distinctly remember doing the Springboard New York program. And it's not an accelerator. It's just a contest where you go in and you pitch. And I won in the first round, the inaugural round, and having individuals, other business owners come to me and said, I looked at this program and I wasn't going to pitch until I saw you win.
Hmm.
I didn't think it was for me until I saw you win. And that's my journey. And it's also what motivates me to get up and keep doing it every day in saying people are watching me to see what's possible. So that's it's kind of been the journey.
Curious about the tough lessons along the way, and I'm sure there are plenty of them. Yeah, you don't have to get into all of them, but you know, maybe help somebody who's, you know, we're intrigued. I'm sure once you say the word entrepreneur, I think, and people who are clocking in, as you said, helping someone else fulfill their dreams. But along the way, there are going to be bumps in the road. Maybe, you know, highlight one of those things that maybe when you first saw it, it looked like a mountain, but you're able to turn it into otherwise for yourself.
I think for all businesses, it's going to be something along the lines. It's going to be financing, right? And so for the first 5-6 years, the brown bag was funded completely out of my pocket. And there were a number of moments where I woke up and said, I'll just go to work. I'm done. I quit. And the last time I said it out loud, the number of people who said, if you quit, who's going to do it? If you quit, we lose an invaluable resource. And it was the realization that what I was doing had a larger impact than what I thought I could ever have conceived it to be. Going to places, restaurants in Toronto, and having the owner know who I was simply because I had shared and reshared his post over and over again. There's always going to be some type of roadblock. There's always going to be some type of hurdle, from lack of support to disingenuous support, and figuring out the discernment between the two, getting good businesses and bad businesses, and that discernment there, those have been roadblocks for me. Like, what's good business?
Right.
Who's doing good business? Is this a one-off for, you know, an incident with the business owner, or is this a trend? There's lots of roadblocks. Does that mean the road is over after, you know, you have to get over it?
And the road has led you to become the host of the upcoming Sankofa conference. How do you view it? Do you view it as also, I guess here's the question. When you do something like this, is it all part of the same focus for you that you might be talking about culture and history, but also you're also there as an entrepreneur? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, if do you find these events are all interconnected?
Absolutely.
Like that?
Yeah. Absolutely. At the end of the day, the overarching mission and vision behind that Brown Bag Minority Business Directory is to amplify the voices of those who are normally overlooked and underserved, whether that be in a business aspect, an artistic creative aspect, even down to, you know, highlighting musicians in the area, artists that are doing visual murals and paintings that we might not otherwise see. So all of it is interconnected. All of it overlaps. They all hold hands. Everything that I do, it is all part of the bigger web. So when people say, oh my God, you do so much. And I'm like, well, it all lays into each other.
How important is it to be organized and disciplined to be able to do that? I mean, when you were talking about it, I'm sitting here, I couldn't do all this.
So if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't exist.
Okay.
Let's start there. I still workforce manage myself from sitting in call centers. So at noon, I have an alarm that's going to go off that tells me take lunch.
Okay.
At like 2 o'clock, I have another alarm that goes out that tells me stand up, because I know myself. I will sit down at my desk and I'll sit and sit and sit. And next thing I know, I've been sitting at this desk for 9 hours straight. I have foregone going to the bathroom, eating meals. And so making sure that I intentionally carve out time for myself to breathe now. And it was a long road to get to that space. That's what helps me keep it all in order.
And Chantel, the theme of the Sankofa conference is Know Thyself, a Call to Diaspora. What does that question mean to you?
I think my partner and I were having a conversation about self-awareness. And I think I finished the sentence and it was, I'm aware of myself in this moment. He led in with, you know, you're changing every second, you're changing. This level of knowing thyself again is that historical backtracking so I can see where I'm going. It's the pulling of the arrow back so I can let go and propel forward. And I think that this is going to highlight a lot of dark spaces inside of people. And I don't say dark spaces by way of ill will or bad intention, but just spaces that they didn't know inside of them existed. I think this is going to light a lot of people up just from being in the space, knowing more about where we come from, our origins, who we are, especially as a community of Black and Brown individuals. They would like us to believe that our history started in chains. And I think that if we can go ahead and dismantle that particular barrier to our history, which Emmanuel does beautifully, it will unlock so much more of our power, so much more of our talent, so much more of our gifts, and ultimately so much more of our magic.
You know, you're going to be a great host because you just stole my last question with that answer that you gave right there. So that's good. So I'm not going to ask you to make your final pitch for the Sankofa Conference. I'm just going to remind people that it is coming up on February 28th, 10 until 4 at Performing Arts. And if you want to register, you go to Eventbrite.
Yes. So it is on the, of course, Eventbrite.com / Sankofa Conference Buffalo.
And Chantel Patton will be your host on that day.
Please come see me.
Oh, I think I would think anybody who was listening for the last 25 minutes will be eager to do just that. Chantel Patton, thanks again for coming in on What's Next.
Thank you for having me.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.